This podcast is brought to you by Deepbridge Capital LLP. Deepbridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Welcome to this latest Deepbridge Discovery podcast. My name is Andrew Aldridge. The idea of these podcasts is to bring to life the people and investing companies behind Deepbridge Capital. So I'm delighted today to be joined by my colleague Ben Carter, who's Investment Manager of Life Sciences here at Deepbridge Capital. So Ben, thank you for joining us.
No problem at all, Andrew.
Good to see you. So first and foremost, can you start at the beginning and tell us a bit about your background before joining Deepbridge?
Of course I can. Probably looking back a little bit further than I'd like to go, but I guess I'll start off with university, and I'm a little bit different than most of the team within the Deepbridge Life Science Investment team in that I didn't study a scientific degree. So I studied business management. I don't know what that means, that I didn't know what I wanted to do at this particular time in life, but
if that's the case, it was the same for me, so yeah, all good.
So I studied business management, and then post-degree, I was successful and fortunate to join a large US firm on their graduate recruitment scheme. And I think really the beauty was that because I didn't know what I wanted to do, they gave me the opportunity of parachuting into a number of different divisions within the company. So I was able to kind of jump into R&D, into legal, into commercial. And they had a number of different product sets as well. So I was able to look at, IT infrastructure. I was able to look at healthcare and a whole variety of different opportunities within that, global business.
And so it gave you a broad experience of all the kind of facets.
It certainly did. And it just really was, I was able to focus just on where my skill set lay, and also just where my interests were as well. So, it landed on, the commercial sector within the healthcare division. Yeah. And I spent 4 or 5, really successful years in there. And ended up as the head of their UK healthcare piece.
Okay. And then following on from that, kind of where did you go after that?
So, I'm not sure they were particularly happy at the time, but I was headhunted by one of our partners, in the healthcare space. And this was a new up and coming, healthcare business. So I wouldn't say it was a startup, but it was certainly a scale up at that particular time. And so it gave me the opportunity to move from a global $1 billion enterprise into a company with 30 staff, with all of the trials and tribulations that you tend to have working in a smaller organization.
Had to get your hands dirty.
Yeah, absolutely you did. And I think, I found it really, really exciting. And, and I really saw that actually I probably preferred to be involved in that kind of startup scale up business than in that large, multinational global company where really you are just a number on a piece of paper.
And all of this after being a BMX world champion as a child?
Yeah, all of this after being a BMX world champion as a child. So I don't know how that's relevant, Andrew, but certainly, sport's one of the things that I've always been interested in. And I guess I am competitive because of, my sporting background.
That's not a bad thing in the commercial world.
It's certainly not. And certainly, I guess that's why my skill set and where I tended to end up was in those commercial departments in sales where, it was really important to hit your numbers and you like to compete A, against your industry, but also against members of your team as well.
So I guess then kind of joining Deepbridge, was that kind of quite interesting to work with a number of companies kind of going through that growth journey that you'd been on?
Yeah, it was. So, I mean, the reason I joined Deepbridge is that, prior to joining, I actually worked with Savas, who's our head of life science.
Yep.
I certainly did. I mean, to work with Savas twice within two companies, I'm not sure many people have done that, but no, he's a great guy. And I really enjoyed working with him in our healthcare startup. When he exited that business, I did at the same time. He joined Deepbridge and we kept in touch. And it got to a stage where he'd grown the life science portfolio within Deepbridge to a number of companies. He kept emailing me, calling me, saying, "We've got it to a certain level now, Ben. I'd really appreciate you, you coming in and using your skill set to support a number of companies as they, they're on that growth trajectory." And it's absolutely why I find, Deepbridge a really exciting company to work for. Every day is very, very different. And all the companies that you work with are, generally very different
as well.
And
do very different things as well. And so kind of going back to kind of working from a multinational, kind of like you said, $1 billion kind of company, et cetera, to kind of working with kind of startup things. what kind of skills are similar, or what kind of things, or what are the traits of those kind of businesses which are similar, and what's kind of vastly different?
That's a really good question, Andrew. And I think, you know, certainly from my perspective, all companies, you know, have similar issues on a day-to-day basis, whether that's with human capital, whether that's with R&D, or whether that's with just trying to commercialize their product. I guess the larger you are, you know, you're tending to try and protect your customer base and to try and, you know, create those barriers, whether that's through patents or through IP, to stop early stage companies competing in that market. And if you're a kind of a startup or a scale up business, it's trying to create novel technologies, create innovation that will change the status quo and allow you to, you know, to really accelerate and try and knock those larger companies off their perch.
It sounds like, obviously, kind of going from one to the other, it sounds like kind of the early stage company, the smaller companies, is, dare I say, is it more exciting because you're kind of challenging? Is that fair?
I think it's certainly more exciting. I think, you know, probably the ups and downs are probably greater than if you're working in a large, you know, multinational. You know, no 2 days are the same, and you can be riding some incredible highs, but of course not everything. If it can go wrong, it will go wrong in a startup or a scale-up company. Yeah. And so that's where you really need a resilient team. You need a strong leadership team, and they're able to, you know, pick themselves up when there's the inevitable downs of working in this, you know, in that type of business.
A different kind of personality, I guess. So, yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
At DeepBridge, you talked about our portfolio companies, and, you know, kind of seeing companies from coming to us initially requesting capital, or, you know, us searching out those companies and through to kind of working with them as they grow. I mean, kind of what do you look for at those early stages in a company? You know, what are the key things that you really kind of want to see in a company when you're taking them on board?
Yes, I mean, we have quite a strict criteria or mandate, and that's important when you're assessing and performing the due diligence on any of the companies that are going to look to enter the DeepBridge portfolio. But I guess because we are an early stage and growth investor, one of the things that I always look at first is undoubtedly the team. And we just touched on that in the last comment, in that having a really strong leadership team or a really resilient leadership team is vitally, vitally important. And if you can blend that strength and resilience with the domain expertise in the space, that's of course going to be vitally important. So I think team, you can't get away from it, is always going to be the most important thing, because you could have a brilliant product with a terrible team. It's not going to be successful. You know, after that, I think, you know, we always look for strong intellectual property, you know, patent protection, and certainly within life science, I think that's incredibly important, because what you're doing there is creating a barrier to entry for any new or existing participants to compete with you in that space, and that can just help accelerate growth. And you know, really on the back of that IP and patent protection, is it's important to have a product or service that's hugely innovative, because without that innovation, you're not going to get patent protection. So it kind of blends into one. And I think, you know, they're kind of key. You know, we are an investor in, you know, as I say, these types of businesses. So we're not looking for lifestyle businesses. We need businesses that are, you know, operating in huge, you know, addressable markets. I think that goes without saying in life science.
I was going to say in the health world, kind of.
In the health world, you know, if you have a product that is, you know, is innovative, it's, you know, it's tackling a big issue, then the reality is it's going to be, you know, the ability to be a significant company.
Excellent. And in terms of kind of, I guess you kind of go back to that people factor, the team, etc. I guess that's probably the hardest bit to quantify as well. I guess, you know, it is kind of a very subjective kind of process, and trying to work out what you want from somebody. Or
yeah, it's incredibly subjective, and I think, you know, what do we look for? So, you know, you could say that it's vitally important for an individual to, you know, to have significant amount of experience. So you're looking at things like their CVs, you're looking at their track record, where have they had previous success? Have they exited multiple businesses? But the reality is, what that does do, if you're looking for experience, you know, you're discounting perhaps some of the young up and coming entrepreneurs. You know, and I'm not sure how experienced the likes of, you know, Mark Zuckerberg was, you know, prior to Facebook, or, you know, Jeff Bezos prior to Amazon. You know, so you can't discount people because they just don't have that experience. What you've probably got to look to is that if they don't have the experience, what does the rest of the leadership team look like? Have they, you know, do they have the ability to take on advice and support from other individuals, and are they willing to build that experience around them? And I think that's where it can, you know, fit hand in glove.
And I guess, yeah, just knowing some of your companies and some portfolio companies, I guess, you know, one of the key things sometimes is where you've got, particularly in your world, that kind of academic, that kind of scientific kind of guy leading yes. it with the idea. It's when they bring in a commercial domain expert that can come in and do that side of it. So it's not just reliant on the academics to kind of drive the business forward.
It's vitally important. I think you'll see that across our portfolio. So, you know, the person that founded the business isn't necessarily the person that will be leading the business 4 to 5 years down the line. So, you know, when we're doing a university spin out, for instance, you know, quite often you've got the lead professor. So they might be the global, you know, domain expert on this area of science, but they A, might not, you know, train on to be the greatest leader or the greatest, you know, commercial mind, you know, that they might be very, very comfortable within just their scientific area. Some people just don't want to also, you know, take on that responsibility. And
it's a different skill set.
It's a hugely different skill set. And, you know, you do get those people that have the ability to do all of the above, but they are relatively unique and Absolutely. Outliers in the field. And what we really like is when an individual, you know, understands their limitations yeah. and they're willing and able to bring on people
that self-awareness of what they're good at and what
there's almost yeah. nothing better than self-awareness
yeah. yeah no absolutely so kind of in you know in the health world, the life sciences world, kind of what kind of trends are you seeing at the moment? So obviously we've just coming through a global pandemic, I guess we've never been more focused on the life sciences world, but kind of what's that breeding and what you're seeing out there at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, there's some significant trends that without question are going to come to the fore in 2022, 2023. I think, you know, one of the key things to say is that, you know, I personally don't like to follow trends. So I think it's important from an investment perspective to try and be ahead of the trend. You know, we always see, you know, 6 to 9 months after there are significant rounds in specific areas that all of a sudden, you know, in your inbox, you're getting quite a lot of investment decks related to, it seems like a regurgitated version of what's just been successful in it. You know, it's difficult to compete if someone's got significant IP or first mover advantage, et cetera. But I think if you look at, you know, life science over the course of the next couple of years, things like AI are coming to the fore with drug discovery. Digitization of the healthcare ecosystem is, you know, without question, one of the big areas.
I guess we've seen a drive to that over the last few years, and I guess kind of COVID just accelerated that.
It's absolutely accelerated that. And when you look at the NHS, for instance, so if you're looking at UK companies, of course, they will still have, you know, global opportunities, but, you know, the NHS is a huge opportunity for them. NHS set up divisions, you know, like NHS Digital, NHS X. And what we're now seeing is that actually those divisions are being kind of consumed by the wider NHS. So, you know, they're no longer these kind of arm length organizations to look at piloting things.
Yeah.
It's the pilots have realized that this is essential.
So it's becoming the norm.
And they're dovetailing into the ecosystem now.
Excellent. I guess, yeah, it's similar to anything. Once it becomes the norm, it's no longer got its own label. It just becomes what it is. It just
Absolutely.
Becomes the service. So we've kind of talked about what's good about kind of early stage companies and what's going on. I kind of, what are the challenges that you find that companies face? I mean, I guess funding's a big one, but other than funding and kind of, you know, hopefully we help with that. And then what else do they kind of face as a challenge?
Yeah, I mean, funding, if you speak to any early stage founder, they would probably say funding is one of the key issues there. And, you know, I prefer when founders are chasing customers rather than, you know, than cash. So again, that's where working with, you know, the likes of DeepBridge is very, very good for early stage entrepreneurs because we provide that, you know, early stage capital, and subject to them hitting the required milestones, then we can provide that continuity of capital, which is vital. We also, you know, hold a great esteem by, you know, syndicating rounds. So, you know, there's a lot of data out there that suggests if you get multiple, you know, funders on your cap table, the likelihood of success for a business goes up significantly. So, you know, We recommend that to our founders, and we also have a brilliant network of partners in the venture capital world that syndicate deals with us. Things like building things that, you know, building a product that nobody wants is something that we see certainly with domain experts in, you know, professors in the scientific community. They perceive that they're perhaps, you know, the all-seeing eye on this particular product and that particular market, but where we are great is that providing that kind of sanity check that actually they've got to build a user panel, They've got to get their idea validated, and it's important that they are exploring what their customer base needs,
yep,
rather than what they perceive their customer base to need.
And I guess that goes back to the start of the actual innovation. I mean, it's got to be solving a problem. It's not, can't just be an innovation for the sake of innovation. It's got to solve a real world problem, I guess.
Absolutely. And I think the beauty is that, given our strict mandate, given the amount of due diligence that we do on all of these companies prior to making an investment, we tease out a lot of this prior to, you know, putting the cash into these businesses and helping them form a plan to be able to, you know, to accelerate growth.
And I guess that's where kind of your supervisory investment committee comes in terms of giving that kind of real world kind of insight before you put cash into a business and gives that kind of forethought.
It absolutely does. I mean, you know, our supervisory investment committee is brilliant. It's made up of the greater the good of the life science community. But, you know, one step away from that as well, we have an unbelievable scientific network that we can lean on. So, you know, whilst we take it to internal investment committee and supervisory investment committee, we would always take all opportunities to people within our wider network that will have a view and can ask us some, you know, some quite you know, searching questions that we can then put to the underlying teams.
So can you tell us a little bit about kind of what your hopes and ambitions are for the next 12 months and kind of beyond that for maybe the next 3 years, kind of what you're looking at and what's your aims?
So we're talking from a personal or a professional standview?
Let's start with professional.
Professional, okay. So
let's try and keep it professional.
Let's do that. So I think, you know, I've been at DeepBridge now for 4 years and it's gone incredibly quickly. And I think the beauty is that I joined when, you know, we were still quite at that very early stage. And over the last 4 years, our portfolio has matured to quite a significant level now. So we're at that really exciting stage where we're seeing, you know, really significant Series A, you know, checks coming into some of the companies that we backed at a very early stage. And that's incredibly exciting because it provides them the requirement, you know, the required capital to reach their kind of, you know, their main goals and ambitions. So realistically, over the next 12 to 36 months, I'm just going to ensure that we're working closely with our portfolio, you know, both those early stage and companies where they are well on their way to achieving their goals, you know, to help them realize their potential, whether that's taking these businesses to an inevitable exit or to work with them to unlock, you know, further funding through the DeepBridge Fund or further funding through syndicate partners.
And I guess, you know, you kind of talked about going to exit, et cetera. I know some of your kind of companies are now starting to see interest, shall we say, from third parties about potential exit opportunities down the line, et cetera. I mean, it's probably too early for some of them just yet, but that must be extremely exciting that you're starting to see that kind of attraction come from the outside world.
Yeah, I think, you know, as I mentioned, I've been here 4 years now, so I'd be really disappointed and worried if I wasn't starting to see that. Yeah. So it's been really good. I mean, we've got you know, a high volume of companies in our life science portfolio now. Certainly a number of them are still at early stage, but there are, you know, a significant number now where, you know, they have meaningful revenues. They have meaningful partner partnerships that they're working with. We've got, you know, the big giants of the pharma and med tech world looking at a number of our companies, whether it's from a partnership perspective, whether it's scientific due diligence, you know, or working with them on clinical trials, for instance. So, you know, incredibly exciting.
And I guess, you know, you talk about revenues and things like that. I guess, you know, yeah, we've often talked in the past about how some of our, particularly in the kind of the pharma world, they'll never make a penny of revenue. It's all about the R&D they're building up.
Correct.
And is that kind of, for you to identify traction, is that then about kind of adoption and people utilizing their R&D and digging into it, et cetera? Or kind of how do you kind of track their progress?
Yeah, so I mean, usually, you know, companies like that, you're right, is very, very rarely would the management team that starts that business, you know, founds that business, take it through to where they are, you know, selling that technology into, you know, multiple continents. So you're looking at the different clinical studies, for instance. And so, you know, what we tend to see is that the large med tech players or the large pharma, you know, companies start to engage with these companies, you know, when they are partway through their clinical trials. They might actually provide an element of sponsorship, you know, of these clinical trials. And that just allows them to actually get closer to, you know, to these companies. That can be, you know, that's where having really, really robust IP is important for our early stage businesses, because there is, of course, a risk allowing these types of companies to get too close. But ultimately, in those areas, they will be the companies where an exit is realized. So it's not unusual for that to take place. And then the kind of the M&A teams within these large organizations are looking at them to see where they think is the right opportunity to try and realize that acquisition.
And kind of last question about kind of our companies, etc. We've got companies now from Aberdeen down to Kent, down to Bristol, over in Wales, in Northern Ireland. Yeah, we've got them across the UK. Is talent an issue for them as they're growing, or is that one of the reasons why we've got such a burgeoning kind of life sciences market in the UK? Is talent out there to help these companies grow?
Yeah, I mean, I have absolutely no issue with the talent that's available to these companies in the UK. I think we're incredibly fortunate. I think, I was asked this question a couple of weeks ago, why do we think the life science, economy in the UK is so strong? And I think we're so fortunate that we've got fabulous universities, fabulous incubators, and just a really, really world-class talent pool that, underpins all of those things. So we've got world leads in a number of these key scientific areas. And also we've got, a fabulous, entrepreneurial spirit, I think, in the UK as well. So it's not just that domain expertise within life science. You've got brilliant people that can come in, partway through the journey and help them accelerate their business plan.
Brilliant. So kind of, with these podcasts, we do like to kind of get behind the people behind DeepBridge and, okay, whether it's colleagues or investee companies or whoever it might be. So, can you tell us a bit about kind of your interests away from work? We mentioned BMXing when you were a child. I don't know whether you still do that, but what are your interests away from work?
No, I certainly gave BMX up just after I won the world championship. I mean,
you couldn't get any better than that.
I couldn't go anywhere else. And it wasn't an Olympic sport at the time, but it now is. So I have a 4-year-old son and I've got an 11-year-old daughter. So I guess it's a brilliant age for both. And so most of my spare time now is, dad's taxi, just experiencing all the things that they're doing, and they're very, very active. And I just love, going to watch them in the sports that they participate with and within their kind of hobbies as well. If I'm not doing that, which is pretty rare, usually it's, sitting down, watching a movie, relaxing in front of the TV with my wife, or, socializing with friends. I love a good night out, and I love, I love sitting down with friends and sharing, a glass of wine, a beer and a conversation.
Good. I'm glad we did mention football. That's good. So the question I ask all of our guests on the podcast is the DeepBridge dinner party. So you're allowed to bring three guests with you, dead or alive, no friends or family, because we don't upset anybody, but who would those three guests be and why?
Yeah, a difficult question. I mean, there's so many people that I haven't met that, I'd love to meet. I mean, the fact that you just said that I didn't mention football. I mean, don't worry, I'm not going to reel off, Bill Shankly, Bob Paisley and Kenny Dalglish, but I think I'd have to say Jurgen Klopp would be one of the people that I would love to meet. Not just because of the success he's brought back to my favourite football team, but he's undoubtedly a really inspiring leader. I think you can just see the dressing room and the camaraderie amongst the players, the spirit that he's kind of generated there. And I think there's a lot to be said that. And one of the things that I look at a day-to-day basis within our portfolio companies is around, leadership and what makes a good manager and what makes a great leader. And I think, a lot of the skills that Jurgen has, can transcend that. And of course, I'm hoping at the end of the dinner party, he gives me one of his legendary hugs as well. who wouldn't want one of those, Andrew?
Well, absolutely. Well, apart from myself, as a United fan, maybe not. But And who else? So we've got two more spaces.
Okay. So I mentioned that, on my downtime, I like to, I enjoy a movie, love to watch TV. So I guess I'd probably go for like Steven Spielberg. If I look at a number of the films that have, I've got great memories of, from whether that's from childhood or even more recently, I think he'd be at the forefront of some of the great films that I've watched, and he's obviously a really interesting character, brilliant at what he does, and just having a mind that is able to kind of create such brilliant things. I'd love to hear his thoughts on that.
Brilliant. And one last place, go on.
Oh, the last person at the dinner party, who would that be? I think. You look at people that you've always wanted to meet, that have made a big part in your life, etc. And I think I've heard some of these, the podcasts where people look at some of the UK's national treasures, and I think, you know, there's been a number of mentioned, but I think maybe somebody like a Sir Trevor McDonald.
I thought you were going to go
for
Alan Titchmarsh.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe the next time I'm asked that question, I might do that. But, you know, I think just given, you know, a journalist and kind of newsreader career that spanned over 30 years.
He's seen and experienced.
Exactly. I think, it just would be fascinating to get, some time with him, and, you know, the stories that he'd have to tell were brilliant. And I think the other good thing as well, he'd probably be the best out of a lot of them, keeping the rest of the people in check as well.
Fair enough. Excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time, Ben. Really good to catch up with you, and look forward to catching you again soon.
Cheers, Andrew. Take care.
Thank you for joining us. If you have any topics that you'd like to be covered in future podcasts, please email us at discovery@deepridgecapital.com. This podcast was brought to you by Deepridge Capital LLP. Deepridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon.